Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. I'm delighted to welcome somebody indeed that I consider a friend. I've known him for God knows long enough, going back to indeed the late 70s into the early 80s, Martin McGuinness, who is the Deputy First Minister for the Northern Ireland Assembly, has indeed garnered the attention and the respect of many of us on this side of the Atlantic. I'm delighted to catch up with you, Minister, on this very significant day, a day that you have had meetings in Washington at the highest levels, including the administration. First of all, Fulcher, you're welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Adrian. It's always a joy to speak with you, and I know better than most the massive contribution that that you have made to educating people about the success of the peace process and the transformation that has taken place in the north of Ireland. And of course, we will always be eternally indebted to the people of the United States of America, to the White House, the State Department, and all our friends in Capitol Hill for the great ally that they have been throughout the course of what have been historic and momentous events in Ireland.
I want to share with you what a lot of us who have been involved and interested and to whatever degree we have supported Northern Ireland going back indeed into the 70s, the nervousness that we feel with respect to the current situation in Northern Ireland, and in fact the timing of your visit to Washington. This is not another, not one more trip to Washington and indeed to your friends in America.
Well, obviously the trip comes at a very difficult and sensitive time for us and the institutions back home. The difficulties basically center on the thus far inability of the British government led by David Cameron to acknowledge the reality that a society emerging from conflict should not be subjected to the level of economic cuts which his government seemed determined to inflict upon us. And if you consider that in the course of the conflict in the north of Ireland, successive British governments poured billions of sterling into the north of Ireland to bring about what many of them desired, i.e. a military victory, pacification of the situation. What is required from this British government to resolve some of the economic difficulties that our administration, both loyalist, unionist, nationalist and republican, faces, is really only a drop in the ocean compared to what they've spent in the past. And if you consider that the issues that we're dealing with at the moment aren't disputes about the constitutional position, it isn't about Britishness or Irishness or unionism, loyalism, nationalism or republicanism. It's basically difficulties that have been created for our administration by the austerity agenda being pursued by this British government. And that's why I'm in Washington today. I've had very encouraging meetings at the White House, at the State Department on Capitol Hill with our good friend Richie Neal, quite a number of congressmen who turned up. And very encouraged as I leave Washington now, I'm on my way to the airport, that all our good friends who have been such strong allies for peace in Ireland will advocate on our behalf over the course of the next short while with the British government. And of course they will have an opportunity during the course of Theresa Villiers' visit to Washington, which is I think beginning just now.
You know, Martin McGinnis, I would like to for you to take us back to, indeed, Christmas Eve of 2014, when we linked with you from here regarding what you had claimed at the time and hailed as a victory, something that was not in the cards a month previous to that when Richard Hart kind of threw his hands in the air and kind of went home, so to speak. Can you bring us to that point and what the understanding was, you know, which appeared to be shared, particularly in the nationalist community, but by and large, all of the citizenry of Northern Ireland?
Well, as you will be well aware, we were very honoured to have Richard Hart and Megan O'Sullivan, two very acclaimed people who were diplomats on behalf of various administrations in the United States, with us in Belfast to deal with a way forward on things like how, for example, we deal with the past, how we deal with contentious sectarian parades, and how we deal with the whole issue of flags, symbols, and identity. Sinn Féin signed up for the proposals that were made by both Richard and by Megan, but unfortunately the unionist politicians were unable to do that. And effectively that left us in a scenario where for the greater part of a year no progress was made. Then in advance of last Christmas we had the Stormont House negotiations where I think we did make further great progress on those issues that I've just mentioned, and I do think that particularly in relation to how we deal with the past, we have effectively before us the mechanisms, structures, which will adequately deal with providing a menu of options for people who were victims of the conflict during the course of 25 years. The added difficulty came when the British government decided that in order to close the deficit that they faced, that they would impose enormous cuts on various administrations in Scotland, Wales, and in the north of Ireland. And it was certainly argued that the extent of these cuts in relation to how it would impact on some of the most marginalised, disabled and disadvantaged people within our society, and also in our government departments like health and education and their ability to deal with citizens, that was something that clearly had to be resolved between us, because we do have a difference of opinion about how we should deal with that. And that has certainly created problems for our administration. But there are problems that have been created by the British government and not by anybody in the administration. So I'm not placing any blame whatsoever on our unionist colleagues. I think that at a time of economic difficulties, people and parties have to decide what is the best way to utilise the resources that we have. And we have argued that we have to utilise those resources in a way that delivers for all of our citizens.
You know, at the heart of this latest crisis, the guts of this is that the massive reforms to the welfare system is supposed to be taken care of somehow by the UK Treasury in saying, well, wait a minute, you know, we're giving you £2 billion, and, you know, since it is a devolved government, do the best you can with it. Is that kind of what many of us here think, that that's kind of the crux of it? You give with one hand and you take away with the other.
Well, I think what people have to remember is that during the previous administration headed up by David Cameron and the Liberal Democrats, Peter Robinson and I have actually agreed that something like £1,500 million was taken out of our block grant by the British government. Now, we're in a situation where, as a result of the Stormont House negotiations, we did effectively negotiate a way forward. But since the Stormont House agreement, we've had further announcements from the British government of further intention to take more funds out of our block grant. And that has created enormous problems for us, which desperately need to be resolved.
But what's the rationale?
The rationale on behalf of the British government effectively is that they appear unable to accept the argument that we have put forward that any society emerging from conflict is entitled to be treated as a special case. And if you consider that as a result of the conflict in the north of Ireland, we have more marginalized, deprived people who are suffering mental disabilities, physical disabilities as a result of the conflict. And those people's needs need to be catered for. So what we are concerned about is that the approach being adopted by the British government will plunge more families into poverty. And if you look at the league table of areas of social deprivation in the north of Ireland, you can clearly see that areas that have a majority of Catholic in it, like West Belfast and Derry, are at the very top of the league of the league tables of social deprivation. And that really places an enormous burden on politicians within both Sinn Féin and the Social Democratic and Labour Party to stand up for those people. Now, obviously, the discussions are around all of the problems that we've faced with. I think what we now need to focus on is how do we resolve this problem. And I think the meetings that I've been involved in today at the White House, the State Department, Capitol Hill, and speaking with friends of the peace process in both New York and in Washington, clearly argue for a solution to be found, which is both the British government recognising the need to be creative and to be imaginative in relation to their contribution to all of this. So I don't see this as something that we are arguing with our unionist colleagues about within government. This is something that both our unionist colleagues and ourselves are concerned about in relation to how the cutbacks that the British are imposing in our administration will impact on both the pro-British unionist community and also the pro-Irish community in the north. So it's about finding a solution, and the best way to find a solution is to apply the same lesson that was learned whenever we had the Good Friday Agreement, the Standards Agreement, the Hillsborough Agreement, and that is for everybody, the British government, the Irish government, the US administration and the political parties all working together to find a way forward. And I do believe a way forward can be found, and I'm very determined to contribute to that solution.
What is your reaction to what we see and hear and read is that the level of frustration, if not the reality of such drastic cutbacks towards the welfare reform, could in fact it could affect the future of the Northern Ireland Assembly?
Well, it does threaten the existence of the institutions. Of that there is no doubt. If no agreement can be found on these important budgetary matters. And it's very important to point out, it's not just the issue of welfare. That is only one aspect of it. What the British government have pledged to do as a result of their success in the recent general election, through a comprehensive spending review, impose further cutbacks on the devolved institutions. And that would be excruciatingly painful for our nurses, for our doctors, for our educators, for teachers, and also our ability to produce through our universities and further higher education colleges the people with the requisite skills to ensure that we fulfill the needs of foreign direct investors, of which there has been a huge amount of foreign direct investment from the United States over the course of the last 4 or 5 years. So I think what it comes down to is recognizing that there is a problem, finding out what the solution is. I have made proposals to David Cameron, who we met last week in London, and again to the US administration here today about the way forward to resolve this matter. And I'm hopeful that that will see everybody coming together to find a way forward which will overcome the present difficulties that we're facing, which as I've said, are not about the usual differences of opinion around constitutional position or political allegiances or loyalties, but are basically problems being created by the economic approach being adopted by a British government that doesn't seem to understand the connection between an austerity agenda and the need to support people who have come through conflict and who are very strong supporters of the peace process. So the last thing we want to see are the political institutions that have gained so much support both in Ireland and here in the United States and in Britain also collapse under the weight of this austerity agenda.
The truth of the matter is, of course, that if the unthinkable should happen, the British government has one hell of a burden to try to make any sense of it, and in fact, it will cost the British government an awful lot more than what we're talking about now. Am I correct on that?
Well, what I would be concerned about is if there was a collapse of the political institutions, if that would leave a vacuum that would be exploited by extremists, both on the pro-British loyalist side and on the dissident Republican side. And we have seen, even over the course of the last couple of weeks, attempts being made, particularly in County Derry, to kill two police officers, husband and wife, who fortunately discovered that somebody was interfering with a car in the middle of the night, and then whenever the examination took place, a booby-trap bomb was found under the car. And recently we had another attempt in Lurgan in County Armagh to kill police officers, as well, of course, as a riot at Ardoyne whenever 24 police officers were injured by loyalist extremists. So if a vacuum is created, that provides an opportunity for these elements who would wish to drag us back to the past to exploit it in their own selfish interests. But, I mean, I'm not looking at a doomsday situation.
Right.
I'm a problem solver. And I think if you consider that the ability that we've all had to bring about an IRA ceasefire, to bring about weapons being put beyond use, to bring about Sinn Féin support for new policing arrangements in the north, surely if those issues which were described as intractable and incapable of resolution, if they can be resolved, then this issue can be resolved also.
I think most of us on this side of the Atlantic would agree with that, and also a real threat which should be brought to the fore as well is while you have the progress not only on the political front but with inward investment in Northern Ireland, that will come under threat as well.
Yeah, and that would be a terrible tragedy because even in the face of the worst economic downturn that the world has seen, myself and my unionist colleagues like Peter Robinson and Arlene Foster have been very successful in attracting foreign direct investment. And I think that, we need to clearly understand that delivering more jobs, good jobs, well-paid jobs for people is vitally important as people continue to recognize the economic benefits that there are by continuing to support the peace process.
It is indeed appropriate that you should be here at this time. And, as I've mentioned to you, on many occasions, the reality of the situation and the seriousness of the peace process in Northern Ireland may be not that well understood here because of all the progress that has been made, since going back to 2007 with the establishment of the Northern Ireland Assembly. It is from our understanding, from the understanding of the Irish and indeed the Americans, that everything is hunky-dory and in fact is fine. I think that your visit it will generate the new level of anxiety that we should have should put to bed the notion that this is just one more political issue that has to be resolved.
Well, I think it is perfectly understandable that because we were out of the headlines for a number of years in relation to the war being over, a lack of conflict, not being in the headlines anymore, and of course against the backdrop of other terrible world events that are taking place with this group ISIL in the Middle East, the situation in Iraq and Syria, the situation in Libya, Afghanistan. I mean, all of these are issues where people are losing their lives on an ongoing basis, and that's without even mentioning what's happening in North Africa. So we are very fortunate that we have brought about a transformation both politically and security-wise in the north of Ireland where people are not losing their lives. But I think now that we have this particular issue in relation to budgetary matters, it really is a lesson for people not to be complacent about a society emerging from conflict after what was a very bitter conflict. It lasted for a quarter of a century. And I think that now that we're focused on trying to find a solution to the difficulties that we've been presented with as a result of the British government's approach to our budgetary matters, I think that this will allow people to sit up and take notice and to recognize the importance of not being complacent, but whilst at the same time appreciating that the work that we've all been involved in the peace process, and nobody has had a bigger stake and investment in that than the United States of America through the White House, the State Department, our friends on Capitol Hill, and our many friends throughout Irish America. So I think that, people will be very focused, and people will continue to be very supportive of the need to ensure that this British government makes its own particular contribution to the ongoing success of what is acclaimed as one of the most successful peace processes in the world today.
Thank you. I know you're heading for the plane. I thank you for joining us. And the message is loud and clear in that actually Irish America does have a role, and that in fact now is the time to use our influence, in getting this problem resolved, and hopefully sooner rather than later. Martin McGuinness?
Absolutely, and I'm very encouraged by the meetings that we've had today, and have great faith in Irish America for the support they've given us in the past, and also what they will give us through this very difficult time indeed. So thanks for having me on the program, Adrian. You're a great friend of Ireland and a great friend of my own. God bless.
Thank you. It will turn out all right because, as I say, we need to rattle the cages and we need to do it now. Wish you lots of luck. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Adrian. God bless.
God bless.
Slán agus panic.
Slán.